Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona. It's time for Valley Business Radio, spotlighting the Valley's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to Valley Business Radio. This is the show where we tell stories that the traditional media tends to ignore and help connect you with the right people. From the solopreneur to the small business owner to the SVP and the C-suite, we're interested in sharing inspiring stories from the Valley's business leaders. I'm your host, Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and I'm joined in the studio today by Sarah Bernstein, owner of Storybook Entertainment. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you for having me here today.
You have such a fascinating business, and I'm excited to get into some of the details here. Why don't you set us up for the conversation with a little brief introduction? What is Storybook Entertainment?
Storybook Entertainment is the Valley's premier theme party entertainment company. We do birthday parties, special events, and family events, mostly for children and their adults. And we do character entertainment and face painting, balloon twisting, glitter tattoos, you name it. We can make any party or event just that much more special and more fun.
Super fun, super colorful, super engaging. How did you get started with that? I know you have a theater background. I want to talk more about that. But when did you get the idea that this would be a viable business?
In 2013, I went to a birthday party for my friend's daughter. She was turning 4, and she is the only girl amongst the generation of that family's smaller people. So the aunt of the birthday girl decided that she had been waiting long enough for a little girl, and she was going to throw her a princess tea party. And the aunt dressed up as Princess Fluffernutter, and she face-painted and taught the kids how to drink tea and eat tea sandwiches. They decorated swords and crowns with stickers. They played freeze dance. They played hide-and-go-seek. It was so much fun. My children at the time were 1 and 4. They were boys. They did not care that it was a princess party. They had so much fun. And at the end of the day, I left and said, there's something there. There's something beyond this living room in Desert Ridge to take it beyond here and bring it out to more people in the valley.
So Princess Fluffernutter mm-hmm. is the originating incident of your story.
Yes.
What happened next? How did you begin to learn the ins and outs of the party business with this special twist? It's not a straightforward thing. Where do you turn to learn how to do this kind of specialized event business?
It was a lot of trial and error, let's be honest. I was blessed with the release of the movie Frozen. Elsa and Anna took over the world for the year of 2014 when I started my company. And we went out with those two characters. We spent time singing. We spent time storytelling. We tried every craft you could imagine. We played lots of different games. And eventually, we narrowed down to what worked best for each age of child. So at that point, it didn't matter if you were 3 or if you were 9, you still loved those characters. So we had different parties for 3-year-olds and 6-year-olds and 9-year-olds. And it was eye-opening to me because though my children were so young, and now that my children, you know, it's actually my son's birthday today.
Wow.
He is turning 10. So I now have lived through that 9-year-old year. It was amazing to me at that time that 9-year-olds were still such little children. They are still really little children. Trust me, I have just finished that year of little childness with my own.
Yeah.
And they still love to play. They still want to have that imaginary moment and that moment of, they want the fantasy to come to life and it gets to come to their living room.
Fantasy and entertainment of all kinds are huge business for adults. I think the biggest mistake we make is training the play out of people until they're in their 30s and 40s and 50s and have to spend a lot of money to go to executive offsite retreats to do things that would essentially just bring the child back that
and
was there the whole time.
They've forgotten their child. They're uncomfortable letting that child out and being goofy and being silly and you always have to be adults. And no, we don't always have to be so serious. And that's what I love about it is that I'm never serious. I live in a world where every day I get to play, every day I get to tell people how much fun you're going to have. And it's not just the kids that are going to have fun. The adults are going to have fun too. And I get to create and build and really enjoy the joy of childhood every day. And I'm by no means a child anymore, and but I still get to live it, and it brings smiles to my face.
Well, you know, I read some research recently that the latest fMRI studies of the human brain and its development seem to indicate that our brains are not fully cooked until in our mid-30s. We expect so much grown-up stuff at increasingly early ages. You know, I have two small boys, 4 and 6, and princesses and fantasy play and imaginative things. I hope that we can continue to instill and inspire that. Birthday parties are in the life, let's flip the script for a second. Life of a parent can be a pretty stressful and significant thing. There's a lot riding on it. We live in a world where parents are often looking to other parents to judge and assess, how are we doing? Do we need to do more? Are we doing better? The keeping up with the Joneses mentality. What does a parent get when they make that first call, when they reach out to you? How does the conversation unfold? I imagine you're really helping to guide them through something. What's involved in that conversation?
Part of it is setting expectations that the party is for a child and that the child is the one that gets to enjoy the party, not your adult friends and not your child's friends. It's really, what does your child want from this birthday party? Who are they? What makes them tick? What do they find fun? And then most importantly, how old are they? Because some people expect their 3-year-old to act like a 6-year-old and they can't. And so one of the things that I like to do is to ask about the child and find out who that child is and then say, okay, let's make the party the best party it can be for that child. At this point, I do consider myself a birthday party expert. I have not only been to a gazillion, I have planned entertainment for over 1,000 birthday parties. It's something that I just innately can do. I don't have to really think too much about how to ask the questions to get to the base of what is going to be the best party experience for that child.
You mentioned probably the most important thing first, which is that you're planning parties around the individual human child who's being celebrated that day. What are some of the other areas that you're often pointing parents to consider or to think about differently than maybe they had been?
A lot of the times parents will say, but what will the boys do? And I'll say, well, again, they're being invited to a princess party. They're either going to play with the princess or they're going to just watch, but they're going to be okay. They're going to survive this princess experience. And then secondly, a lot of times people don't know where to throw their parties. They don't know of the vast amount of venues that are here. And for me, I'm always happy to recommend a venue because a venue doesn't mean that I can't come. Storybook Entertainment goes to venues all over the valley, but a venue can really make or break your party. Some kids, I'm planning my own 7-year-old's birthday party. He wanted to invite his entire class of 22 children. Plus, we have some friends that don't go to his school that he's friends with. We ended up with a 26-person guest list. And he really wanted to go to Cracker Jack's in Scottsdale. And I said, I can't do that. That's just not a possibility. But we can throw a great park party. I'm happy. His birthday is in April. I always have a park party option. And I'm not doing anything special. Even though I am the birthday party person, there is a character coming. I have some crafts. There will be cake, probably pizza. And the kids will play in the park because that's what they're supposed to do, in the park. And so it's kind of, again, looking at it as, what time of year is it? Who is this child? What do they like to do? Because there is everything from painting places in town to trampoline places to paintball. You can find it everywhere. And because Phoenix is so big, there's so many options. And so I like to really help parents find the best one for them.
You must have a vast network of vendors and locations and performers and others who contribute to putting this together. What are some of the moving parts and different roles involved in actually executing some of the parties that you put on? What does it take to make this happen?
Well, the first thing is having a good, solid conversation with the parent to make sure that I know what they want. And then secondly, I do partner more with some locations than others. I know the owners or I know the managers. And so it's a little easier for me to partner with them than some of the places I've never been. But again, then I call wherever the party is and make sure that they know I'm coming because sometimes parents forget to tell them those things and make sure that I know how it works best in their location. If it's at a house, which a lot of our parties are at houses, then it's reminding parents how we're going to get there, how we're going to enter so they're not nervous about that experience. And then last but not least, it's making sure that when I communicate to the people who are going, whether it is one of my performers or if we've hired a magician or we've hired a balloon artist or something along those lines, that the communication is clear and open. Everything has been confirmed with the parent, confirmed with the performers, and that they also are connected so that the performer can call the parent to make sure that they know everything they need to make sure that little Susie or little Johnny has the best party possible.
Now, you've been involved in various kinds of performing and theater productions for a long time. You've got a Bachelor of Music degree in musical production and direction from Northwestern. You did some stuff in Chicago. You've done some stuff here. Talk a little bit about your own theater experience. How did that get started? And what are some of the significant milestones along your journey?
I've been in plays since forever. My mother was a concert pianist, so she used to direct the community theater shows in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And then we moved to Maryland, and I took a break from it for a while, but came back to it in high school and realized that I really enjoyed being on stage. It was a place for me to feel comfortable. I liked the people. I made really great friends. I think that theater teaches a lot of the same skills that a sports team can teach. So you learn the communication, you learn collaboration, you learn working together, you learn the word ensemble, which means together. You can't do theater by yourself. I really thrived in that environment and went on to focus mostly on voice because at that time, the musical theater collegiate programs were not as developed as they are now. So you went and got a degree in voice or a degree in theater, and then you figured out how to merge the two. I started in vocal performance and then moved to musical production and direction because I realized I didn't want to sing opera. I really did want to do theater with youth. That became very clear to me while I was in college. So I changed my major, music production and direction. I created with my advisor and took a lot of theater for youth classes in college. Left college, still loved being on stage, sang and danced, la la la. Moved to Maryland because I met my husband. And as I said, my mom and my dad lived in Maryland. My mom was a music teacher and she said, they're looking for music teachers. You should get a job as a music teacher. And I said, well, why would I want to get a job as a music teacher? But I got a job as a music teacher and I taught elementary school music for 3 years and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed working with little kids. I always knew I liked working with high schoolers, but I really enjoyed working with those like kindergartners, first graders, second graders. They were so fun and they were little sponges and they loved you and they loved being in my class. And I don't think I did anything that much more special than any other music teacher. As you said, they were ready to still play. And so I was able to play with them in my class. And so I decided I wanted to do that for a living. So when we moved out to Arizona, I looked at ASU for a graduate degree program. They have a master's in fine arts in theater for youth, which is actually really well-known, world-renowned program started by Viola Spolin many, 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 many years ago. She's like the queen of using theater to teach, not just to be theater. But I never went because I got hired at Arizona Theater Company and taught theater through them. So that's kind of how I ended up back here in the theater world in Phoenix.
When you were at Arizona Theater Company as the education manager, you dealt with a lot of folks similar to, I suppose, the performers who now work with you sometimes. In other words, they're also theater kids or they're people who found something in the self-expression of costumes and singing and performing. Do you think that in an environment where so many arts programs are really under, no, this is not new. This is kind of the ongoing conversation for decades has been funding and support for these public and private places where young adults and even younger children can be exposed to these things. What are some of the core skill sets? You mentioned the working together and many of those things, but what are you seeing people get from pursuing this form of self-expression that whether or not they ever end up owning storybook party business company or end up as a professional performer of any kind, what are they picking up along the way that translates into the rest of their life?
I think one of the most important things young people get from theater is a sense of self-confidence. They learn how to stand up in front of other people and say, this is who I am. These are the skills that I have, and I'm good at this. It's really hard for people to say, this is what I'm good at. People don't like to say I'm good at something. They don't like to brag about themselves. And I don't want to say it's bragging, but it is being comfortable with saying, I'm a good singer, or I'm a really good actor, or I'm really good at lighting a stage, or I'm really good at organizing, so I could be a stage manager. And that's where my skill sets can lead. And I can translate all of those skills then into careers that may be theatrical or not at all. One of my best friends from college was such an amazing stage manager. She's now a pastor of a huge church in Racine, Wisconsin. And that's a ton of organization.
Yeah.
And
stage management.
And stage management and
right.
presence and standing up in front of your parish and speaking and knowing how to speak and knowing how to evoke emotion when speaking. Who would ever have thought, like somebody who went to college to learn to sing, because that's where we all started, ends up standing up in front of people and serving her community in such a different way, but such an important way. She is a leader in her community. And I think so many of those skills she learned probably when she was 7 or 8 playing, you know, theater games in her, you know, home school.
You know, this is such a fun conversation. It's sparking all kinds of memories that I have not really thought about. I grew up a performer of sorts because I grew up in a radio station. And when I was 5 years old, my dad got the bright idea, he owned the radio station, that our family should produce a weekly children's radio show. I was 5, my younger sister was 3. And so mom, dad, me, and Laurelie were the voice talent on this weekly show. We recorded it at home. My little sister couldn't even read at the time, so dad scripted everything, and then he would read her part, say, and Laurelie says, and he would say her line, and then she would parrot it right after, and then he would go back and edit all of it out, and this is how I learned to edit. You cut the tape with razor blades and stick it back together with a piece of sticky tape, and, you know, went on, and my younger sister was more of the stage performer than I was, but we had a very vibrant performing arts society at our private high school. She played a lot of the lead roles. I did a lot of the set design, special effects, and played some bit parts. I was the ventriloquist and the cop in Annie, and had some parts in The Wizard of Oz and Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dream. You know, the typical run of high school theater performance, Sound of Music. You're right. There is something incredible for me now as I'm thinking back about it. What I got from that experience, because I was involved on the production and building and designing the sets and doing lighting and sound and other kinds of things, I really got that we could take the high school gym and turn it into anything. And just that exposure to the idea of like, well, we can build it and figure it out. What can we do? Working closely with the folks who helped to build the backgrounds and just the idea that over the next month, this basketball court is going to turn into the Yellow Brick Road.
And the Emerald City.
Right. And then we take it all down again after the month of the performance or whatnot. So that idea that with the right people, the right combination of creativity and ingenuity and just stick-to-itiveness, you know, I remember practicing with the orchestra late at night because, you know, it was just trying to nail something. The idea that we can make something together it's intangible. It's not always explicitly said, but that's definitely a takeaway that I have.
There's also a level of discipline. You know, you're speaking of this concept of staying late at night and rehearsing and working till the work is done and done well. And I think that's also something that people learn from the arts. And I don't just mean theater arts. I mean band practice. You know, those kids who go home and woodshed those hard sections on the saxophone for hours until it gets better so they can come back and play it correctly the next day. There is a level of discipline that every artist has to have or their work will never get completed. They don't give up.
We're going through a musical education with our own young ones right now, and there's a fabulous program created here in Arizona called Let's Play Music, which is a structured 3-year curriculum that you can start at age 4. It's designed to introduce musical concepts and skills to children before they have the finger strength and dexterity to get on a keyboard. So it starts with bells and moves up from there. It's interesting that you talk about discipline because on the one hand, I would say I'm terrible at discipline. Like that's my Achilles heel. It's the worst thing. However, when I'm as passionate about something as I was about those performances or building those sets or some of the work I do now, I will stay up till 2, 3, 4 in the morning. We'll get up super early and I will work on it. The idea I think we should be encouraging is when you find something that you love, go deep into that. You don't have to love everything. You don't have to work as hard, in my case. This is now me soothing my young self who got a lot of grief for this. You don't have to work as hard on your math homework as you do on the performance. You love that more than this. That's okay.
You're going to end up using math skills to build that set because you have to know how big those pieces need to be and you need to learn the physics of how much weight they'll bear when you stand on them. And it's amazing how many skills are translatable.
I mean, we would usually just throw in a few extra screws and hope it holds. But yeah, no,
some
you're right.
Some cinder blocks underneath it, make sure, yeah.
I shudder to think about some of the stuff that we did in the high school gym. We had built this one glove that actually shot flaming fireballs for the Wizard of Oz. Ooh. I'm not sure we would do that now. Ooh. But it was flash paper in copper tubes. Our science teacher at that school also had a stage production company doing science exhibits. So he helped us come up with some cool stuff. In the context of your business, as you've grown since 2014, you've also begun to expand out of the world of just parties for young people and into the world of corporate events or things for big children, right? We first met, and I want to talk about the Scottsdale Children's Business Fair in a minute, but we've also met at ILEA, the Events Association. So you're in multiple different circles. This is not just a house party phenomenon. Tell me a little bit about how this is growing and where you'd like to take the business in the future.
As an artist, I will always push to grow. That's my personal need. I need to grow. That being said, I think there is thematic entertainment options for, as you said, big children. They like to still walk into some place and be wowed or realize that they can transform a space. I saw an amazing Instagram post, and the gentleman had used lights to transform a room into what I actually thought was an aquarium.
Jeremy.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And I mean, I was floored, and I'm just watching it on my, you know, on my iPhone. I can't imagine what it would like be like to walk into that space. Now imagine walking into that space and seeing mermaids, real live mermaids.
Human performers. In a room decorated with light.
Yes. Yeah. And they look like real mermaids. You know, how much does that then take that corporate event or that special event and take it to the next level? It really becomes even more special. You can hire Storybook to take your Great Gatsby event and throw us up there on stage and we can sing and dance the music that was popular in the 20s in appropriate vocal style, with appropriate accompaniment, with great dance styles that you would have seen in the 20s. It just takes it to another level. And because we are all musical theater performers, we love these experiences and we can do them. I'm going to toot my own horn. I said nothing wrong with bragging if you think it's actually real. I think we can do better than most here in the Valley because through my theatrical experience and through the people I know in the Valley, I know some of the most talented performers here.
I'm getting a whole other cut on this as these kind of mini productions. This is musical theater, but it's not something that's going to have a 2-month run in a normal brick and mortar location. They're almost like pop-up theater events. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that make your business different? In addition to that network of performers, what are they getting when they get Storybook Entertainment?
Well, in the children's world, what I think you're getting is that we are entertainment. There are, you know, companies that call themselves events or nothing at all. They just have a pretty name. We are entertainers. We're going to come and entertain the children, which I think takes a lot of stress off of most parents. They don't know what to do with these kids when they get there for the party. If you bring in Storybook Entertainment, we're going to entertain and engage those children for the time that we're there. That's our job. So you, as a parent, get to enjoy your party. That's our goal. If we've done that, if we have entertained and made those kids have a fun time for the hour and a half, 2 hours that we're at the party, the parents get to sit back and just go, great, my kid now has a fabulous memory. I got to talk to my friend and I got to take pictures, which whoever gets to take pictures at their own kid's party. But hopefully we make it so that you can because you're not the one doing the work. As far as with our entertainment that is geared for adults, we really do try to raise the bar in what's expected in a pop-up environment. We rehearse, we perform. So we're not just singers, we are performers. There's a big difference. And I like to lead by example. So there's very few times that I get up there and actually perform with them, but they all know from watching me in rehearsal the level of intensity I expect from them. So I'm leading the rehearsals, I'm directing the performance, and they could tell because of my background in directing what is expected of them as their mini performance. And it is, it's mini, pop-up theater was a great way to put it. Sometimes we'll do something and only do it once and then it's gone.
But you still prepare and rehearse and work on the material and work on the performance with the dedication you would bring to a longer run.
Yeah, we had a two-hour rehearsal last night singing a song over and over and over and over again for a performance on Sunday. And we meet again on Saturday and Sunday for more rehearsal. And what's great is that I have people that are talented enough that free rehearsals can make it so that we have a special, spectacular performance and not have to do 25 like you would have to for a full stage show.
That's phenomenal. And also bringing that ensemble quality back in where everyone knows what everyone else is doing and how this is going to go down. In addition to storybook entertainment, you have gotten involved in other child-friendly business-related events. Where I first met you was at the Scottsdale Children's Business Fair. What is that and how did you get involved in that?
The Scottsdale Children's Business Fair is a new venture. It is overseen by the Acton Children's Business Fair, which is a nationwide organization through the Acton Business School. It is their nonprofit portion of their business school. They set out to create environments that allow children to be successful in running their own businesses. I have two little entrepreneurs in my house, not surprised because they have two entrepreneur parents. My son, who turns 10 today, looked at me over vacation and he wanted money, more money. And I said, there is no more money. Like the money train has been cut off here. We're done. Like it's over. If you want money, you're going to have to earn the money. Now we've tried earning money for chores and following through on things. I've even offered to pay him to do some of the things for Storybook Entertainment. He wants nothing to do with it. He decided that he would start his own business and he makes gel wax candles and they're quite pretty. I love them and he enjoys making them and we work together. It's a bit of a project together because he can't drive and he can't order anything off the internet and I don't let him handle 200 degree melted wax. So that's where this came from because I then needed to find him a place to sell these candles or there was no point in making them. I looked online and I found the Arizona Children's Business Fair, but I couldn't see that they were having a fair coming up. And so I wrote to the organization, Acton, and applied and thus started the Scottsdale Children's Business Fair.
And when was that?
That was on November 10th of 2018. It was at the JCC in Scottsdale, which is right at Scottsdale Road in Sweetwater. We had 27 different booths, and I think about 350 people come through in the 3 hours that we were open.
It was very, very busy. It was hopping. There was a lot of folks there. How many people do you think came through that were not connected to one of the young entrepreneurs? Or was it a lot of the friends and family? I mean, we didn't know anybody. My wife, Jen, found it on Facebook and said, we're going to go to this. And so we brought our kids. What's your sense of the audience, the foot traffic, if you will?
I think a good portion of the foot traffic was related to the children that were there, but that's because they were part of the marketing.
Right.
So who knows whose Facebook post you saw that brought you there? I have a Facebook page, but there's only 137 people that like it. Like my Facebook page, my Scottsdale Children's Business Fair Facebook page, so that you can learn more about it. The hope was that everyone would share those posts. So if you have a kid in the fair, you go and you share that post on your page, and that's what social media is. Yes, I know. I'm a genius.
Well, you put the social back in media, and you're starting something.
Yes. So I mean, I have no idea where you saw it, but clearly you did.
I didn't. But
well, your wife did.
Jen did, and we went. It was phenomenal because there were so many different micro businesses there. You know, just some that stand out in my mind. There were several different slime operations. There was some cookies and other things. There were the gel candles. I remember your boys had the clear gel candles with things in the bottom. Mm-hmm. Quite stunning. They're not something you would normally see.
Yeah.
And many others. What are some of the standout types of businesses you've seen there? And you're doing another one, right? Mm-hmm. So tell us about what's next and how do people get involved?
So we have another fair coming up on April 27th from 10 until 1. It's again at the JCC. It's a very centrally located facility. There's plenty of parking. It's indoors. I just have decided it's a great place to have an event. The kids that do put on their own booths are expected to run it by themselves. Their parents are not to help them unless it is a six-year-old. You know, if your six-year-old is doing something, I am so excited. You can help your six-year-old. But if you're 9 or 10, you should be able to make change and you should be able to talk about your product and you should be able to sell your product. And so that's the point, is that the child is doing the work, not the parent. So far, we have 22 booths signed up. I hope for a good number more. We've rented a bigger space this time with hopes that it'll be larger and that we'll have more people come through. We see everything again from slime to baked goods. So the young woman who made the enormous but delicious cinnamon rolls is back again. So she's...
It was a crowd favorite.
It was. She sold out of every cinnamon roll and every challah she made. We have bath bombs and jewelry made from guitar picks and pillows, people making pillows and their own art this time.
And it's not all products, although it's mostly product
mostly
businesses,
products.
But there was a few service businesses there. There was a young man who did
video montage
and picture slideshows, custom. You send the pictures and he would put them together. So it really runs the gamut. If your kid can think of it and put it together as a business, is there an application? What is the process like for somebody who wants to have a table and wants to have their business at the Scottsdale Children's Business Fair?
There is an application. It's online. They can apply through there. I accept almost everybody that's applying because I want everyone to have a chance. At this point, we do have a lot of slime. So if you're thinking about slime, maybe...
It's a tough market to break into at this point. You're getting near saturation.
It's a little oversaturated. But it can be anything. It doesn't have to be polished, I guess is the best way to put it. There are certainly some people there who have done this multiple times and they have a more professional-looking setup. And then there are the kids who have their brownies that they made in Ziploc baggies and the poster board sign that says homemade brownies by, you know, Steven, $1 a brownie. And that is great too, because it doesn't have to be complicated. It can be anywhere from your homemade lemonade stand that we all ran as children to your full-blown candle. Wax, gel wax,
custom
candle,
custom robot.
Yes.
Engineering.
Sure.
Right.
Yep. Make a robot.
There was also some art as well. I remember now there was people who you could buy some of the pictures that they had drawn, or for a premium, you could place a custom order. You
yes.
could commission a work of art
yes.
that would be drawn and colored right there mm-hmm. at the table. So really your imagination is the only constraint on this.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that this is not entirely separate from the mission and values that you're bringing to your business, Storybook Entertainment. So how do you see the two worlds together, the Scottsdale Children's Business Fair and then what you're up to with Storybook Entertainment? There's a common thread. What do you think it is?
For me, it's bringing joy to children. It doesn't matter if it's through entertainment or for them to feel successful at running a business. It's about the joy of childhood and letting every child find something that makes them smile that day. Whether it is that you're coming to the fair, and the reason that the fair is on the 27th, I will say it is somewhat planned because Mother's Day is only 2 weeks after that. So whether or not you come with your $10 so that you can buy something nice for mom for Mother's Day, and that makes you happy because you're thinking ahead and you're buying something for your mother who makes you smile every day.
And experiencing that autonomy and independence.
Of shopping.
Yes.
I mean, one of my most favorite memories is my father taking me to Woolworth's in Pennsylvania, like the five and dime, and giving me, you know, like $5 and telling me that I could buy my mother, her Mother's Day present at the Woolworths. And I remember buying her jelly shoes. I mean, I have such a clear memory of this. And that's why I said, I want to do this by Mother's, right around Mother's Day, so that children, daddies can bring their children to shop for their mothers. And because nothing at this fair, well, I won't say nothing. Most of the things at this fair are very, very affordable. People are making things that are priced right for children to buy for their mothers.
Right. Cash only.
Cash only.
For the most part.
Yes. And then again, like the opportunity for children to feel that the things they contribute are valued. Whether it is making a friendship bracelet out of string or a cookie, somebody buys your product and it makes them happy, and that makes the seller happy. There's nothing in my business that makes me happier than hearing that a kid had a wonderful birthday party. That's my goal. At the end of the day, everybody feels they are smiling, they found joy, and they found value in their day.
It sounds too like there's also an opportunity for kids to really be proud of what they make and create and get the kind of feedback and interaction with customers and just interested folks that helps validate and support that creative spark. Without getting on a soapbox, there are so many things in our current society that seem to put a damper on some of that stuff. We want people to somehow not stand out. And, you know, who do you think you are? Kinds of ideas unfortunately permeate society and families and things. And so having a space where their uniqueness and weirdness and wonderful creativeness can be nurtured and supported seems to me to be extraordinarily valuable. I think if you're listening to this show and you're a small business owner or an entrepreneur or a business leader, an executive, someone who is wanting this kind of qualities in the grownups you work with, you should come, whether you have children or not, to the Scottsdale Children's Business Fair and just walk around and interact with the young people. You never know what comment or interaction you have that puts somebody on the course to being the kind of person you wish was working in your organization today. Mm-hmm. It seems to me like, again, with children or without children, a way to get involved in supporting some of the youngest members of our entrepreneurial community. And I encourage everyone to come. Give us the details again, the dates, the times, the location, and we'll put the links and so on in the show description below the published episode. But what is it for folks listening live?
The Scottsdale Children's Business Fair will be held on Saturday, April 27th, begins at 10 a.m. and ends at 1 p.m. And it's at the Scottsdale JCC at the corner of Sweetwater Road and Scottsdale Roads.
Admission to the general public is free. Mm-hmm. You check in at the front desk when you come in, but there's no cost to attend as a member of the public. Is there a fee for having a table and registering your business?
There is a small fee. It's $20 to get a vendor spot. That covers the fact that we're inside. We provide a table and two chairs and a linen. So you just have to show up with your products. You don't have to come with the big tents and the everything that sometimes you do if you're going to like a farmer's market.
Right. You don't need the booth and the backdrop and all the other things. You just bring your products and everything else is there for you. This is also important, I think, in helping kids who are a little older and will and able to do some business math in figuring out what their costs are so that they can calculate their profit at the end of the day. Because, and there's nothing wrong with this, but if mom and dad buy all the ingredients and pay the fee and they just keep all the money, that's fine. And they're not really getting a sense of the fact that there are inputs and outputs. And I'm not saying you need a full P&L, but you should.
You should see the spreadsheet that my son has. Now, he doesn't keep it, but he sits next to me as like we do it. But like for his gel wax candles, there's quite a number of expenses. And he sold probably 150 candles at this point. So that P&L sheet is pretty intense, I have to say. But again, it also, I think there's something to be put into the value that nothing, you know, I can't offer the booth for free. I could, certainly. But I think there is that concept of there has to be a cost to value the participation. It makes it that only those that are really going to be engaged in this process sign up. When you do sign up, the great thing is I send you a very children-friendly business plan. It is 4 pages long. It is big print and lines for you to write your answers. It asks simple questions, but it does get you thinking about how do you make a profit with this business? Where are your costs and what will you have to charge in order to make sure that at the end of the day, you're not in the hole? Because that's not the point of running a business. And that's not the point of the day. The day is that at the end of the day, you feel great. One of the questions in the application is, how will you know if the day was a success? And definitely, there are some people that say, if I sell out my whole product or this, that, and the other. But guess what? That doesn't happen. Well, no, it did. It did happen for the girl with the cinnamon rolls. But for most part, a lot of people say, I will know if my day was a success if people like the product I'm selling. That's always really telling to me. I like to see that kids are going, am I making my customers happy?
Well, that's such an important skill for and mindset for grownups in business as well. The idea that we're serving through our business and we're bringing value and joy to the extent we can to the people we do business with and for. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Sarah Bernstein, where do people learn more about Storybook Entertainment?
You can go to storybookentertainmentaz.com, which is our website. It's pretty robust and gives you lots of information about the company. We do have a Facebook page, Storybook Entertainment AZ. You can follow us on Instagram, Storybook Entertainment. We don't tweet. I can't get into the tweeting. So
this is a post Twitter
business
model, but you may very well have the most Instagrammable birthday parties and corporate events.
We do
in
have
Arizona.
A lot of fun pictures on Instagram, and I am going to show my age right now. I'm going to start doing stories. I know I need
Instagram
to,
stories.
Instagram stories. I need to do them, but I have to wrap my brain around that. But yes, I'm going to join the trend and jump on the bandwagon.
I love it. And I love this business. I love the idea of putting a smile on kids' face. I love the idea of having people stand up for who they really are and what they're actually good at and leading with value. That is marvelous. Sarah Bernstein, owner and queen of Storybook Entertainment, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me.
For all of us here at Business Radio X, this is Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and we'll see you next time on Valley Business Radio. We'll be right back.